Welcome to the first episode of Earth Station Trek. This is a podcast where we talk about Star Trek, everything from the early days on NBC to the future on Paramount Plus and everything in between. I'm Charles Kelso, and it's my pleasure to introduce my fellow co-host, Keith Johnson.
Hello, everybody.
Alan Seiler.
How's it going?
And Veronica Daschle.
Hey.
And today we're going to be talking about the third season of Star Trek Discovery. An exciting year. I wonder real quick if we could go around and just everyone general impression of Discovery, and then has season three lived up to your expectations, or has it changed your perception of the show? Whoever wants to jump in first.
It is exceeded what I thought. I didn't and still don't like the first season very much. Enjoyed the second season. This season took me kind of places. I didn't know where this was going, so it was nice not to know where any of this was going. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Got some quibbles about some of the technology and stuff, but overall, I loved it. We got to talk about why lithium is the only thing in the universe that works, but that's a whole other conversation.
I really enjoyed it. Really enjoyed it. Like Keith was saying, I liked the first season quite a bit. The second season was where it just really took off. I loved the second season. I enjoyed season three a great deal. There's a few little character moments that I would maybe have played out differently. And, you know, as far as expectations go, God, who knows? I mean, who could possibly go into this without any sort of solid expectation, because we're in completely unknown territory,
right?
Which was really exciting to do. So I was really enjoyed seeing it all play out and can't wait to see where they go from here.
Yeah, I really enjoyed seeing everything in the future where you weren't trying to compare it to whatever the heck was going on when they were filming in 63. So I really enjoyed season three a lot more than the other two seasons.
Let's remember that word future, because I got to come back to that.
Yeah, I've been very violently up and down on Discovery over the course of its run, from loving an episode one week to very nearly throwing my remote the next week and storming out of the room.
Yes.
I felt like it's been the quality of the show, because of the turmoil they've had behind the scenes, I think, has been very up and down. So going into this season with some trepidation, it's been a big year and a bit exciting year for Star Trek with Picard, Lower Decks, which I've loved. So I was nervous going into Discovery. Would they be able to hold me for the year? And I'm happy to say that I loved this season all the way up to the end. I have my criticisms along the way, but it's just been a fun 13 weeks of Star Trek.
I got to say, it's been a fun 23 weeks of Star Trek.
That's right.
With Lower Decks and Discovery back to back.
Yeah.
This 23-week run has just been a thrill ride.
Absolutely. And I mean, to think that we got, if you count the one episode that aired in 2021, 33 episodes of Star Trek over the last year. That's, I mean,
yeah,
it's been decades since we had that much Star Trek TV in a year. And, you know, after 20 years of reboots, reimaginings, prequels, all the episodes we got this year were all beyond where we were 20 years ago in Nemesis.
We're
moving into the future of Star Trek in three different eras, which is exciting.
Absolutely.
So speaking of going into the future, the 32nd century, an all new era far beyond what we've seen before. What do we think about the 32nd century as presented on Discovery?
What I need to post, and actually I'm going to post this to y'all in the other group. I've been doing a stream of consciousness note-taking as I'm watching Discovery. I wanted to do all these posts, which is, I really wish I had been keeping up with everybody else, because I kept asking all these questions. And one of the notes I took last night was, with all this crazy technology with the sphere and the Red Angel and blah, 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 why did they create the Star Trek series before Kirk? Why didn't they just jump ahead in time to the distant future? Wasn't a problem.
Right.
Well, what do you know? Answer my question. I had no idea it was going into the future and that they look like they're going to stay.
Yeah, it is. This is the permanent home for the series.
Wow. I think that's a bold move. I like that. Yeah, I like that. There's a couple of continuity things they were irritating me with, like, you know, think like the whole thing with the Trill. I mean, it was minor. I'm like, are you going to tell me they know about Trills and then Picard didn't know about Trills? Well, they don't know about Trills Picard's time because that took place in the future. I like it, and I like to see where it's going to go. It gives you a new Federation they have to build. There's relationships with other races that are going to have to be repaired. And there's just a whole new universe to look at, which I think is going to be great because I'm not one of those people who 100% can't allow them to vary somewhat from canon, but in a way that, personal opinion, I don't care for the Abrams universe, but in a way that Abrams and them can't do, they can break away from a whole bunch of established canon and basically chart their own paths because they don't have to worry. So they can talk about the past, but now they can do all this other stuff in this new future world without always being focused on canon. I think it's great. So I'm actually excited about it. Bold move.
Yeah, Discovery to me always felt uncomfortable as a prequel because while it's trying to be a prequel, they also want to do a bold reinvention of Star Trek. They want to do, you know, mind-blowing futuristic technology, things that feel cutting edge today.
Right.
And then turn around and say, well, this is 10 years before Captain Kirk's Enterprise, which to me just, it never felt quite right. When Captain Pike says helmet and his helmet magically appears around him, mm-hmm. I would cringe every time. But I find that now that they're 800 years beyond where we were in the 24th century, that crazy future tech doesn't bother me at all.
Yeah,
exactly.
The first time they showed the reprogrammable matter, that was pretty cool. I like that a lot. And it fit in that time a lot more than anything like that fit pre-Kirk.
The interesting thing is that all those same criticisms were lobbed against Enterprise. Mm. And, yes, you know, and it was interesting that Enterprise took the approach of sort of doing a retro futurism.
Yes.
Where they base their designs, costume and sets on modern submarines, but sort of cast it forward. And I thought that Enterprise really, really captured a really great aesthetic sense as far as their setting and that it comes before TOS and all this kind of stuff. I thought that they did a really good and believable step forward from where we are to where the series had begun. Discovery, on the other hand, I mean, I don't really have too much of a problem with it because you can't do a series in the, you know, 21st century. It's such a sticky thing. You know, you don't want it to look like it's from the 60s because a modern audience is not going to buy into that.
Absolutely.
So, you know, they intentionally put themselves in a weird place.
Yep.
And, you know, and I get that they wanted to tell a stepping stone kind of story leading up to Pike and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, you have to find a way to do it that makes sense. And I'm not sure that they did in their first, they were kind of trapped in their first two seasons. Moving it to the 32nd century is the absolute right thing for them to have done all along. So I'm glad that they did it finally.
Yeah. And it gives them the entire gamut of Star Trek history to play with. There's no Absolutely. More what aliens can we use? What aliens can we not use? I mean, you want a Bajoran to walk by, a Bajoran could walk by,
right?
You know, just the options are limitless.
One thing you said, Alan, I think that's funny because that's one of my quibbles with the entire series, all three seasons, which was I, like everybody else, felt the charisma and magnetism of Pike.
Yeah, baby.
Wow, that guy is awesome. And despite myself, I like Spock. But I really felt, as much as I like those characters, I really feel that those entire storylines were unnecessary, in my personal opinion. It's not the way I agree with, it's not the way I would have put Discovery in this timeline. I don't like the fact that Michael Burnham is another Spock. I mean, is another, you know, it's almost like Star Wars or something. And I imagine there must be cartoons on the internet where there's like a whole room full of people and there's a joke where, hey, Spock, this is your long lost brother, sister, cousin, whatever. So I don't like that she had the relationship with Spock. I don't love the whole Pike Enterprise thing, but I'm like you, okay, I'll take it. Now they're in the future. I wish they could have found another launching point to get into the future. But now that they are, I think they have so many places to go. And one other quick comment you made about Enterprise, as crazy as it sounds, the Enterprise uniforms are among my favorite.
Oh, absolutely.
They look more real than just about anybody else's. You know what I mean?
I 100% agree with that.
Yeah.
I think one of the real strong points that we have currently with the CBS All Access platform is that once we start getting these new shows, Strange New Worlds with Pike, the Section 31 series with Georgiou, we will then have all these productions at like varying points of Trek history. Mm-hmm. And they have this opportunity to sort of go a Marvel Cinematic Universe route where these series are going to start influencing each other.
Right.
Where a plot point from Picard might play into a later season of Discovery. And I think that's an incredibly exciting place to find our favorite show, and a really, really great creative place that the writers and producers have put themselves in. So I am really excited about where we're going to go from here.
Me too, because it's uncharted.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, like when this season, when the Kwat Malat showed up, I was thrilled.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
It's little things. Once it's introduced in one show, it just becomes a part of the tapestry.
Exactly right. And that's the beauty of having this production and having these shows in all these different time periods. Everything is going to connect. And I think that's just an amazing thing.
And I was thrilled every time this season when there were things that I felt were pitfalls that Discovery's fallen into in the past, sort of things that I didn't like that they did, that I was afraid that they would do again, that they avoided. And I cheered every time. The Federation wasn't evil. The Federation wasn't destroyed. Michael Burnham's mother, while I'm not sold on her being a Romulan warrior nun,
right,
who didn't cause the burn, and she wasn't the mysterious lady in charge of the Emerald Chain either.
Exactly.
So I was just thrilled that she was somebody else. Things like that, that I feel like now that they've got consistency behind the scenes, you've got one showrunner that lasted more than five episodes, and that you're getting stronger storytelling as a result, I think.
I will say that I agree with the point about not having Federation be evil. I would like to have them found themselves in a much more bleak future when they arrived. I think that we found out who the Federation is and where they are way too quickly.
Sure.
I would like for them to have almost gone a whole season of not being able to figure out where they are, not being able to plot a course, you know, through a meaningful future. Like they don't know, like everything is foreign to them and they have to find their way. And I think that would have been a really exciting prospect. And then find the Federation. Mm. I would like for it to have been like, they find the Federation and the Federation is completely unrecognizable. Like it has evolved into this, you know, whole different thing that Discovery sort of becomes a linchpin in rebuilding what it should have been all along. But still, even that, I mean, I was pleased with how it played out. So
yeah,
it's not like a complaint on my part.
Yeah, same here. I thought it was going to be a little more dystopian for a longer time.
Exactly. They would have
to kind of, sort of. I guess that's why some people keep talking about shades of Gene Roddenberry's Andromeda, because he was trying to bring back the Systems Commonwealth.
Right.
But that was going on several years. But this was abbreviated with the 13 mm-hmm. episodes. So I agree with you. I thought so. And also, there was weird because there was a couple of times where people said things about, you don't know the Federation. It's not that, basically paraphrasing, it's not the good entity you thought it was. And so I was like, I thought, was there something menacing behind the scenes? And it looks like that's not the case at all. Looks like they're just saying they're surviving.
But at the same time, this is particular to the first two episodes, they came across people for whom life was hard.
Right.
You know, they were living under really, really tough circumstances. And the idea of the Federation was this shining beacon,
right?
Was this point of hope, you know? And I thought that was a really interesting choice. And I thought that was going to be a little bit stronger plot point throughout the season. And so that's one of the reasons that I thought that they kind of came across the Federation a little too soon. I wanted to see what the universe or the galaxy was, how living in the galaxy was with the Federation as a very reduced power.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I don't think we saw enough of that before finding the Federation.
Sure. That said, though, once we did find the Federation, I liked the portrayal a lot, particularly Admiral Vance.
Yeah, dog.
He, to me, brought the same sort of energy that, in a different way, than what Captain Pike brought to season two. Great example of a Starfleet officer, the guy who's carrying the torch. You know, you believe that the Federation can endure because people like this still believe in it, and they're still working for it. So I was a little thrown when they weren't on Earth. They got to Earth and Starfleet had already left. And then we had this little second quest to find Starfleet headquarters.
Same here.
What did you think about Starfleet's new setup?
I guess it makes sense in that if warp drive is so limited, and one thing to Alan's point, what I thought was interesting was all these planets who have defenses against other planets. I mean, there's like a doggone shield that covers all the Earth when you even get to it. So that's a very interesting world. So I guess in that case, when you're guarding the resources, I can kind of see them moving the Federation headquarters out into space so that, I hate to say it, if they take it out, it's just them instead of an entire planet. And maybe in some ways, it's more central given space travel. I don't know, you know, how the organizations are laid out. So it actually kind of made sense to me, but I could see in the future they would bring it back to Earth. I could see it going back to what used to be Starfleet headquarters. And speaking of Starfleet headquarters, that tree that everybody sat under and got all nostalgic about, can we assume that Boothby raised that tree?
That's my assumption.
I swear I expected him to be there, a hologram of him.
That's where my mind went with it.
Absolutely.
One of the things that I was really, really fascinated by is the sort of the changing landscape of the Federation and what worlds are still members, what worlds aren't, what worlds had joined since our time. And I'm really looking forward to seeing more exploration of that. We've got a pretty good bit spelled out about the Romulans and the Vulcans.
Yes.
But we only got one episode of Earth and Earth being a separate entity now. And it's, you know, and I find that really fascinating. I want the ship to get back to Earth because I want our crew members to be able to investigate what their home planet is like 900 whatever years in the future. And, you know, do any of them have descendants? You know, are they able to reconnect with any of their distant families? I think that's a fascinating concept, and I really hope that we get some of that.
Yeah, I was pleased to find that Earth is, you know, they're keeping to themselves, but they're fine. Earth isn't destroyed or isn't bad off. Once they go down, Earth well, it looks like they're doing great down there. But it was an interesting twist that the out of the way planet of the week adventure was Earth.
You know, exactly right.
You know,
exactly.
And Booker commented that he's never made it out this far. You know, the Earth's sort of an out of the way planet. And then, you know, a great little Star Trek story, sort of the little, you know, nail on the head, sort of obvious Star Trek message of, you know, you pull off your enemy's evil looking mask and it's you underneath, you know. But I enjoyed that a little, maybe Next Gen or even original series feel to that with the sort of Scooby-Doo reveal at the end.
Scooby-Doo.
I agree with that. So what did y'all think about that? What did y'all think about what Alan at first said about the whole, I guess at this point, the 3-year plot of bringing in the whole thing with Pike and bringing in the Red Angel and bringing in the fact that she was a Red Angel. And a question I have to ask, control and the whole excuse going to the future. Did you like that? Did any of that bother you? The only thing I think that bothered me was the whole thing with the burn. I was even okay with the fact that basically a child's scream caused the burn. I'm okay. If you're going to believe in dilithium crystals, because if you ever read a text spec of the dilithium crystals, somehow antimatter can pass inside a dilithium crystal, which is 100% impossible in real life. So you already got to go with it. So I was actually even okay that a kid's scream caused the dilithium. I just couldn't get past the fact that I can't believe that in an entire galaxy of all these different races, from the Gorn to the Metrons to all these people, that dilithium is the only thing that channels faster than light travel. I just had a hard time with that being the only element that can do that. And I got really kind of stuck with that. I mean, I get it for a certain type of technology, but I'm thinking there's nothing but dilithium that you can use to, because basically dilithium tunes warp plasma, which means that everybody in the universe kind of travels with warp plasma that has to be tuned to dilithium. I had a little problem with that.
Well, they mentioned a few alternative methods. You've got the Borg transwarp conduits that they didn't say it, but that looked like what they were traversing there in the the second to final episode.
Yeah,
but those were full of debris, presumably from people whose ships couldn't take it. So the, you know, becomes more and more dangerous, I would expect, as more people failed to make it through. They mentioned quantum slipstream in the first episode.
Yeah, that's what Bookship uses.
But is it baryon particles? I'm blanking on the name. There's the specific particles you have to have in order to power your quantum slipstream that comes from that Voyager episode. I think it's Timeless.
That
were very rare. So it's right. I think the thing with dilithium is it's reliable, it's always been abundant, so that's been the sort of the go-to for the galaxy. But then you take that away, and you know, the Star Trekking is a lot tougher.
Yeah.
So it's like gasoline in our real world, right?
It's that's the analogy. You know, it's which gets a little muddied in the end when they find more dilithium. I don't think that would be the solution we would want for our fossil fuel problem, is to find more fossil fuels.
Well, you know, it's a good point. A couple of things about that, to your point, because it's funny. Again, I was jotting down notes, and I swear one of my notes said, "You're kidding. Dilithium is the only way to travel fast life." And I started listing races. What about the Metrons? What about all these other people? What about the first Federation from the original series with the Fasarius? You're telling me nobody knows how to use anything but dilithium. And I wrote down, what about the Borg transwarp corridors? But to your point, on a couple of times, they said something that make it seem like the transwarp corridors are difficult to navigate, not just because of the debris, but it seems like subspace was kind of jacked up. Mm. And I'm wondering why, because in the last episode, they said the dilithium has a subspace component as well, and his screen traveled through subspace. So maybe that's how they tried, you know, to get around that, you know, that whole excuse with why they couldn't use something like transwarp. Because I'm thinking everything. I'm even thinking about the time when Barclay got his intelligence enhanced and he literally truly folded space for the first time. I'm writing down, what about jump gates like in what's the series? Babylon 5. I'm thinking about some stuff like that.
Well, that's what the on Nevar they were working towards. The Vulcans and Romulans were building the jump gates that failed, and they thought that they they thought that they had caused the burn. But
interesting,
right? It seems to me like it's sort of taken for granted that dilithium is the way to go. You know, it's the easiest, probably cheapest. And I would expect there's a lot of planets whose economies are dependent on dilithium. So there's a lot of political pressure to continue using dilithium. And then no one had time to prepare. No one knew that one day dilithium would be a problem. And so everyone was sort of just caught where they were at.
So to your point, when you mentioned about there's an entire planet of dilithium, here's, Alan, what you were saying about the future. What the heck are they going to do to protect that planet for the rest of the galaxy? Because the Federation is administering that planet. I hate to ask about them. Where are the Klingons? Where are the Gorn? Where are the other people who might try to take that dilithium planet?
And
what's going to happen there?
That's right. And I think that's one of the things that we're going to be seeing in the next season.
Yeah.
Is, you know, where are these other races and what situation are they in? And I'm really excited to see it. One of the things that I'm most looking forward to seeing is really investigating Nevar.
Yes.
How is this combined culture, you know, how has it developed over this time? And I'm really excited about that, because Romulans and Vulcans are probably my two favorite Star Trek races. And to see them finally gaining the unification that Spock was working toward is really, really exciting. And I'm looking forward to seeing that delved into a bit more.
Yeah, and I thought it was interesting that the three people who were testing Burnham represented the three aspects of Vulcan culture, because one guy was pure Vulcan and was logical and basically didn't want to be bothered with the Federation. One guy was pretty much more Romulan, which, and I found very ironic, they said the Romulans were the ones who did not want to pull out of the Federation.
Right.
Not the Vulcans, the Romulans. And then the lady represented the one in the hybrids, or the hybrid of the two cultures. So that's very interesting. I thought Enterprise, and I know so many fans hated it, I loved Enterprise treatment of the Vulcans, where they were about to lose logic and found their way again.
Me too.
And I'm hoping they can do something like this here, because I think there's fascinating things to watch there. The possibilities are really great there. Do you want Vulcans and Romulans and Klingons back? Do we want all the same old races back again to explore?
Yes.
Yes, but I want new things too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When they first announced, you know, we're going into the future and, you know, we don't know what the Federation will be like, and they won't understand where that, you know, all this kind of stuff. Sort of the premise that I envisioned was that The Federation is going to be like hopelessly fractured.
Yeah.
And it was going to be Discovery arriving into the future as a reminder of what the Federation had been, what its core principles are, and a combination of that and some really huge, really massive outside force that comes in. Because, you know, people unify when they're faced with a common opposition.
Yeah.
And I was kind of thinking that they were going to go that route. Like some major force is going to come from the outside and attack. And that was what was going to help bring the Federation together out of necessity. Didn't go that way. That's okay. I do want to see new races. I do want to see new threats.
Yeah.
You know, I really enjoyed the Emerald Curtain or Chain, whatever it is.
Emerald Chain.
I really enjoyed that as sort of a new force, as sort of an anti-Federation, but it's made up of races that we're familiar with. I want to see a wholly new thing.
How far do we know how far the Burn actually extend? I mean, is it extend only in the Alpha Quadrant, Beta Quadrant?
I don't think we know.
How would they find out?
Yeah, when they can't communicate anywhere past, like, you know, local space.
Yeah, so yeah. I guess at some point in time, they may jump far enough to where the Burn didn't affect it. Because, I have no idea what the range of that thing was.
The Talaxians might be fine.
Good point, right? I mean, I assume the Beta Quadrant, because I know the Romulan Empire was laid just inside the Beta Quadrant. So maybe the Beta Quadrant and Alpha Quadrant, but yeah, who knows about the Gamma and the Delta Quadrant, the Borg and Species 847. Well, Species 847 too, they're different. So I guess they would be affected. So yeah, that's very interesting to find out how far that went. But I'm very curious to see what's going to happen when everybody realizes there's an entire planet of dilithium and a Federation is sitting on it. That's potential for war.
Absolutely. You know, and that was one thing that I don't think played out really in the first episode when Burnham and Book are in the trade city, you know, and they're sort of running for their lives and they're making their escape. And Michael stops for 30 seconds and grabs as much dilithium as she can and basically steals it.
Yes.
What happened with all of that?
I thought the same thing. I thought, hey, she's stealing stuff. You're right. What happened to all that? That was great.
I tell you, those first two episodes were so good. The first episode where it's Michael meets Book and they're in this completely foreign territory.
Right.
As far as the time frame, as far as the planet they're on, as far as the society they find themselves in, everything was unknown. I thought it was great. And then the second episode, when it's basically centered completely on the ship, and the ship crash lands, the ship has to, has to rebuild itself. The crew has to deal with their trauma, and most specifically, Detmer. I was so excited that the show gave Detmer this sort of like subplot, at least for the first five or so episodes, of dealing with trauma.
Yeah,
and I was watching a lot of the message boards, as we used to call them back in the day. And, and there were so many people who was like, oh, she's been taken over by control. And I'm like, no. This is a purely human reaction. This is trauma. This is nothing more. There's no sci-fi to it. It's just trauma. And I thought it was such a great idea for them to play that out and not make it a quick fix, end of the episode sort of thing. They let it go for, you know, I think five or six episodes.
Yeah, almost and half that's the season.
Phenomenal. You know, and this is, you know, she's one of the bridge crew who are not main characters, they're support characters. And to give that sort of material to a support character was phenomenal.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, to your point about people thinking she's been compromised, I of course you think that because she has, they made a point of saying that she has enhancement, she has cybernetic implants. But they quashed that really quickly because she went to the sick bay and the doctor scanned her and said she was physically fine. So at that point, and then you didn't see little red dots in her eyes like you did with the other thing.
Right.
You know? You never saw anything like that. And, you know, that goes back to that old joke that you always tell. Why is it everybody taking over every bomb and every remote control in television and movies has a red light flashing on it? Because, you know, in real life, you'd see that stuff. You know, you'd be talking to Ariam, why are there three red dots in your eyes? But I thought that was funny. But I agree with you. When she had the breakdown at the meal, boy, that was rough. And she started telling that crazy limerick about Stannis' blood, blood. And she kept laughing. Wow, she pretty much had a breakdown right there.
That entire episode was hard hitting. Because you had the stuff with Adira down on Trill going on at the same time. Mm-hmm. After the night that episode aired, the sci-fi author Robert J. Sawyer posted that he thinks that Discovery may have won their first Hugo based on that episode. And I think that would be, I mean, that's a possibility, I think, because that was a phenomenal episode. Sort of the big emotional episodes that Star Trek, you know, used to do from time to time. You'd have something like The Visitor.
Family.
Right. But I thought that episode was tremendous.
Absolutely. Yeah, I did too. I really did.
What's up with Adira's boyfriend? Do we think it's simply just a bad union that because she's human, he's not fully integrated, and that's why she's seeing him? Or are they trying to say something more?
I think there's something more.
Thanks. I agree. Okay. My theory is that normally a Trill symbiont passes on to, you know, its next host or whatever. It's not necessarily someone that the current host is intimately connected to.
Right.
And I do think that since they were, you know, partners, I think that they had a strong emotional connection. And I think that there's something different playing out with Tal and those two people. I think and I think it's a really interesting development, and you know, and they're both in the cat. They've already said that both of them are returning for season four.
Really?
So I'm really excited to see, you know, what they're going to do with that, because this is a whole new thing for what our understanding of Trill.
Yeah.
So I guess in some ways, it's always the definition of a Trill, it's always weird. It's kind of like the definition of the memories of the Avatar and Avatar the Last Airbender. I mean, I guess the thought has always been the Trill symbiote does not download 100% of your personality and memories. It's not every little thing that you are. That's what I always thought. But to your point, in this case, what if it really 100% basically downloaded his entire personality into the symbiote?
Yeah.
So that he literally is his entire personality without a body. And I wonder if that's what it was, because the fact that the holo program recreated him and he was talking, that was weird. So there's definitely something else going on.
Yeah. But at the same time, one time Dax's previous hosts possessed all of her friends and Curzon almost stayed in Odo.
That's right. That crazy episode. You've
seen before that the Trill previous host can exist independently. So yeah, I can believe that something weird happened between her between them being human and having that relationship with
Gray
in the past. I really like the way they, for one, developed a little family with Stamets and Culber. They have a little family on the ship. But then also I love the way that Culber phrased Gray's predicament at the end, where sort of for you to be seen, for you to be truly seen, is sort of Gray's arc, which makes it a nice metaphor for the visibility of that community.
That was some deep writing, and those are the cutest kids on the planet too.
Yes.
And it was almost heartbreaking when he told them that. And speaking of that function family, what a dysfunctional group of people. The lady from the Federation, she says something like the fact of, you guys don't work very efficiently or something like that. Cause they're all basically like, Stamets says something and Tilly goes, duh. And the lady's just looking at them and they're insulting each other. She goes, you guys don't really work very efficiently. And they go, oh, this is how we work. And then later on, she goes, well, you get it done.
I like Tig Notaro anytime she's on.
She was not on enough this season.
No.
I think that it was less screen time than last season. And that disappoints me greatly because she's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the most important character on the show, as far as I'm concerned. Only because in season one, the show was taking itself so damn seriously.
Yes.
And her character coming in near the beginning of season two was the needed kick in the pants that the show it was the greatest moment.
Yeah.
Yeah. If she was full time on the show, I would love for her to have been the first officer. Because I think that would have been
agreed.
Extremely entertaining and a bit more plausible than
right.
Is she actually the chief engineer? It's not Stanley.
No.
Who's the chief engineer?
We've never met the chief engineer of Discovery.
Yeah. Okay. That's what I wondered about that.
Yeah. So they're down there somewhere.
I mean,
we know it's not going to be somebody with a Scottish accent.
They're in the office. They right. have underlings to do all the real work.
Okay. Interesting. So a question I had was, what was one plot device or maybe character that you guys didn't like? What was something that you were most disappointed about from this third season arc? Anything that you stood out and you go, ah.
Veronica, you've been quiet for a while.
Yeah.
I mean, it's third like? Season specifically. There wasn't a whole lot of arcs that I didn't like. I mean, there is a mm-hmm. whole sequence in the last episode that was.
Go ahead.
Displaced.
Turbo lift, right? Yeah,
Coruscant yes. is in the turbo shaft.
Oh my god, that was ridiculous.
Yeah, that was really rough because the inside of the turbo lift area was bigger than the entire ship, and they're jumping from turbo lift to turbo lift, and that's not really yeah. how it works.
It looks like the Discovery could fly through its own turbo shaft.
Basically.
Absolutely. And then they didn't have girders or railings or anything because it was flying right. on anti-gravs, which I'm thinking right. that ain't good because if you lose complete ship's power, it's just gonna crash. That's the whole thing.
So, okay, and you've got like me. A 3 mile drop to hit to the
ground. Okay. Yeah, okay. I noticed that too, and I made a note and I thought and the fighting was good, but after a while I made a note like there's a little bit too much fighting here. It was getting a little bit too much on the Star Wars side.
That sequence did go on a little longer than it really needed to.
Yeah, they went that felt to me like, look, we can do, you know, big budget movie on a television budget.
Right.
You know, and add that to our production studio's reel. Right. as we're selling, you know, more than it serviced the story. And beyond being whether or not it's consistent with the way we've seen every other turbo shaft in Star yeah. Trek before Discovery, just designing a spaceship, you want the inside to fit inside the outside in most cases.
I mean, right? there are exceptions.
It's yeah. a TARDIS. Right, sure. It's a TARDIS.
Right. So that's a good one, Veronica.
Yeah. Is there anything else, Veronica, that you found? Like, was there a character you wanted to see more of that you didn't get to see or storyline?
I would have loved it if Rin hadn't have died.
Thank you very much.
I was really looking forward to seeing some more Andorian because
me too.
The only Andorian you've really gotten was an Enterprise, and Jeffrey Combs, of course.
Yeah.
But I was really looking forward to seeing an Andorian that was working closely with the Federation because they've always been there, but not really.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
And he had a cool look with the antennae.
Yeah,
removed, you know, right. and a little bit grizzled. I liked Rin.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But hopefully he'll be back in a wide variety of prosthetics roles. That's my hope.
Oh, I would imagine so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would imagine that they'll use him somewhere.
How about you, Charles? Anything that you thought was that you wanted to see more of, it actually disappointed you in the third season?
I thought that I could see what they're doing. It seems like they're fast tracking a few character story arcs to get to where they wanted to be by the end of the season.
Mm-hmm.
One of those in particular, Tilly.
Yeah.
They were sort of in a situation where out of our main cast members, you know, who is first officer, it can't be Stamets.
Right.
Culber wouldn't make any sense.
Right.
Tilly's all we've got left. So they're sort of fast tracking Tilly into more of a command role and then giving some of that young ensign part to Adira instead. But it felt pretty silly to me that the ensign is sort of like if, you know, Sisko had replaced Kira with Nog, that would have been strange.
Right.
Yeah, but exactly. it sort of brought me back around in the penultimate episode when Osira said that, you know, we captured the ship so fast, I thought it was a trap. And then it turned out there was an ensign in charge.
Yes.
And so at least they know, you know, they're well aware of what they've done and they've got their reasons for doing it. But yeah, I was pretty thrown when Tilly became Ensign Tilly became the first officer.
Yeah.
Me too. I thought that for how about you, Alan?
On that point, I was thrown by how easily accepting all the other characters were.
Yep.
About that. You know,
yeah.
I mean, come on. Lieutenants and lieutenant commanders who, you know, are outrank her. Are like, absolutely. Sure, you go ahead and be my boss. That's fine. I just thought that was goofy. Okay, so your original question was plot points.
Mm-hmm.
And then you added, secondarily, you added, what character do you want to see more of?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so for plot point, that stupid Melody.
Yes.
What the? Okay, so
I forgot about that.
That's the whole point. They made such a big deal about this melody and this mysterious role that it's going to play in the burn and all this nonsense, and then nothing. And I just thought, what? And so I'm a musician. So anytime that you're going to play some kind of plot with a musical element, excites me. And then it just went nowhere. So that's my plot that I was like disappointed by.
Good point. Good point.
The character that I want to see more of, my collective answer is the junior bridge officers.
Agreed.
I love every one of them. I want to see more of them. I want them, you know, you don't have to have an episode that focuses on them, but you have to integrate them into what's going on.
Right.
And there were a couple of good examples of that. One was the Detmer subplot at the beginning of the season.
Yeah.
In the second episode after the ship crashed, you have Bryce, who's involved in all the scenes where they're doing repair work. You know, so he gets dialogue.
Yeah.
That's not, you know, communications open or whatever. You know, and that's the way you do it. And then the end of the season, the final episode, Owosakon gets her big hero moment where she's the one that saves the damn ship.
Yes.
And I was so excited about that, except that I thought, oh my God, this is another Arium thing.
Yeah.
They're setting her up for a death.
Or Non.
And Non, exactly. And I was like, if they kill off Owo, I'm never watching this show again.
I thought she was goners too. I thought, she's gone.
So first of all, I was, you know, those are great examples of how to integrate these characters in a more meaningful way. And I think a lot of that comes down to Michelle Paradise, who became one of the showrunners this year.
Right.
The two episodes that she wrote last year was the Arium episode.
Yep.
So you're gonna use Arium to be the, you know, the body of control, and she's the one that gets taken over. She had to do the work of building who this character is, making you care about her, setting up the whole like taking over situation, and then killing her in one episode. And she did an amazing job with it. And then the other episode she wrote was the next to the last one, the two-part thing. And she wrote these scenes where characters are sending like their, you know, emails back home to their families and say, I'm never going to see you again. And I'm really sorry about that, but we have this mission and we're going to go. And she didn't have to include Detmer and Owo in those scenes. And she did.
Yes, she did.
And I think that Michelle Paradise is really the one who is taking notice of the secondary characters and throwing them a bone once in a while. And I want to see more of that.
Yeah, I agree with you because I noticed that in season two when Project Daedalus debuted, and it wasn't just Arium, the entire bridge crew, that whole group of characters just seemed sort of to come alive. Like,
they had names.
Yeah, well, they had names. They had names. But they hang out and they have relationships.
Exactly,
and it's like, wow, these are people for the first time that I felt on the show. So I was very excited to see Michelle Paradise stepping in as the showrunner.
And another one of those scenes from season two was, and I don't remember which episode it was in, but they're all sitting around in the mess hall and they're playing a word game and they're just joking with each other.
Yes.
And that was so, it expanded who these people are in a small way, but it's a meaningful way. You know, it sets the tone for the relationships that they have with each other. And that's so important.
Yeah, it's funny you said that because looking at them together, and I don't know how it is, but when they are in some series, you can tell they almost kind of force it together where they you can tell they're kind of saying, okay, now we have to show you that these people are a family. But when I have seen them, to your point, in the mess hall, when I saw them in the last couple episodes fighting for the ship, they actually gel together very well. They're incredibly likable. And I was watching it and in just the little ways, like Owo would tell Detmer, you got this, when nobody else was looking.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They really, really, really come off like people who know and like each other and work together. And absolutely. I think that's amazing given how little, like you said, individual storylines they have. I don't know how they pull that off. I don't know if they cast it for that kind of chemistry. But they absolutely gel. They absolutely gel. Even that lizard guy who seems like the comic relief, the guy with the personal transporter.
We got a lot of great Linus scenes in the first few episodes, and then nothing.
Yeah, he just disappeared.
Yeah,
I mean, when he kept transporting all over the place,
dude. Oh man,
he may have transported Linus himself too far.
Well, that's true. Well, he was around a little later When was the episode where he molted?
Yeah, that I think that was one with Book's planet.
It was, but was that before or after the? No, that was after the malfunctioning transporter thing. That. So he was around. I guess he was just molting the whole season.
Yeah,
yeah.
Or he was just heartbroken when Georgiou left. Yeah, they had a little. They had a little thing going on.
Right, right.
So what do we think about Georgiou this year? I'll jump in.
Okay.
Because coming into this season, I did not like that character whatsoever. I don't like, not Michelle Yeoh. I think she's great. And I thought her captain Georgiou was great. I don't like the Emperor. Mm-hmm. Don't want her to have a spinoff. Don't want it Section 31. Don't want her to be on the screen. But I found myself warming up to her some this year. Absolutely. I still wouldn't say I like her. They were very clever in the second episode of the season. They put Saru and Tilly in a situation where they were overpowered, they're trapped, and then all of a sudden Georgiou comes into the room. Right. And I, as someone who hates that character, thought, oh, now you guys are in trouble. Like, oh, well done, writers, because you've manipulated me. Now I'm happy to see Georgiou for there the first go. Time.
So what is it you don't like about her? Is it because she's is it because she's Mirror Universe? Is it just she's too almost
she's evil, she's an ass or a jerk? I think they conflate how much they enjoy working with Michelle Yeoh with how much the characters like Emperor Georgiou.
Right.
Because everyone's really sad when she leaves. You know, everyone seems to value her more than throw her in the brig. Why is she in the briefing room and come to the captain's dinner?
See, that's what I was thinking. You know, I know that Jet Reno is sort of limited use. But I was like, why isn't Reno in the Thanksgiving dinner instead of Georgiou? I mean, that doesn't make any sense to have her there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought they stretched it a little bit when the only person I honestly could see being sad and crying would be Burnham. But you're right. Everybody else was talking about how she made me a better person and I missed her. And I'm thinking, I didn't see that camaraderie develop with them and her.
Yeah, but you know, you say those kind of things when someone's about to walk to their death.
Whether you mean it or not, you're gonna say it.
They ended an episode on her wake, and then the next episode they were still there. Like we're still mourning Georgiou into next week.
Yeah.
But I will say she grew on me a lot over the course of the season, and I didn't like the Mirror Universe arc, but I really enjoyed the two episodes we got this season.
Man, those were killer episodes.
Now I don't know if we needed to devote almost a fifth of the season to the Mirror Universe when we have a storyline going on, but I really enjoyed those episodes, and I'm more intrigued now about what they do with her next, because I think they brought her character a long way in a small amount of time.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm interested now. So, which is a lot further along than I was before.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. I think they're going to have to develop her character, because to me, to your point, I could literally never get over the fact that this woman was the empress of an empire that spanned hundreds of thousands of light years, probably over maybe hundreds of billions, if not trillions of people. And no matter what happened to her and how far she fell, seeing her as a commander, and you know, not that you're even so much worried about her doing evil, it never gelled with me. It would be like if you were go to work and Genghis Khan is sitting at the Dex next to you, you know.
And then he throws your lunch on your lap.
Exactly.
And then you give him a hug when he leaves.
Exactly.
I miss you, Genghis Khan.
It just didn't work, you know. You go mail your package, and Stalin is sitting there taking your packet. And I, no matter what they did, no matter how much the guy over Section 31 tried to put her down, I just couldn't buy it. It never made sense to me. Even if she wasn't quote unquote evil, I'm thinking this woman was over a galaxy spanning empire, maybe trillions of people. I never saw it. It just never worked for me that she would ever be anything but trying to be in command. So I had a little bit of problem with that. I was a little disappointed in how she left the show. I didn't love that. My personal opinion, I completely dislike the Guardian Forever's image. I don't even know what the heck that was all about. That drove me crazy. I hated that. I just didn't. I just like the Guardian when he was mysterious and he was just an arc, the arch, and him sitting there with the hat and being
but
all
he was
kind of
still
clever.
Mysterious.
I hated it. I mean, I really, then at the end when they go, who are you? I am the Guardian of Forever.
Right.
I couldn't buy that. The only other thing that kind of threw me for a little bit of a loop that it threw me a lot was her mother showed up and she's now a mystic on Vulcan. And, and they didn't really act. If you think about it, they were awfully comfortable with each other. If you think about it, they've only talked like before that show, they've only talked for like 10 minutes in 20 years. And there should have been a whole bunch of mom, you know, I can't believe you're my mother. But somehow it's like, hey, baby, I'm a Vulcan mystic now. And I got to be real tough with you during this trial. And it's all right, mom. And, hey, baby, you know where I am. Bye.
I did think that was incredibly awkward. And
it was
really
weird.
Just thrown in.
It was.
And it just didn't. I don't know. It didn't do anything for me at all.
It made no sense.
I loved that episode, and I loved seeing the Vulcan ritual and all that stuff. I thought it was wonderful, but seeing her in the Romulan sect just did not make any sense to me.
They reset the character.
Yeah.
They just flat out just reset the character.
They did.
Her dynamic with Burnham was entirely different from in season two.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, she's a Romulan warrior nun now.
Yeah.
Exactly. What did you think, Veronica?
I genuinely don't have an opinion there. Sorry. I know you're
right
trying
place.
To pull me into the conversation, but genuinely.
But see, that's even worse because that means you're neutral, which means it didn't move you for good or bad. So that means it was like really bland.
Correct.
Yeah.
Well, Veronica, what did you think of, we got several new characters this year. Adira, Gray, Kovich, the guy with the glasses at Starfleet Command. Book. We got Book. What did you think of any new characters that you liked or didn't like?
I'm excited to see more about Book, especially because, I mean, we visited his planet, but even then there's a lot more to learn about him. And I want to know what the heck is up with his queen. And is that really a cat? I roll up to find out more about that cat.
I'll tell you what, I just want it to actually be a cat. Everyone is making such a thing like she's a queen of some galaxy or whatever, or she's a shape changer, or she's a, you know, a flurkin or whatever. I think it's going to be great if she just turned out to be a cat.
That would be awesome too. I just want to know.
Yeah, I really liked Book a lot. I liked his relationship with Burnham a lot. I'm glad that I was so worried that they were going to kill him.
Me too.
But he made it all the way to the end.
Yeah.
And we're not, now we've got on Discovery, we've got, you know, the Stamets new little family, and then we've got Burnham and Book. Mm-hmm. Really more families on Star Trek than we've had probably since DS9.
And this isn't on Discovery now, but Saru and
Sukal,
is sort of their own little family unit now, which I think is really neat.
Oh yeah,
and I'll tell you, I love the Stamets family unit, and I love the way that Culber has been much more integrated into the story this year.
Right,
you know, he's not his own sort of plot,
and he's a doctor this year.
Exactly. Right.
Yeah. Exactly.
And a psychologist sometimes too, when needed.
Evidently, because there's no ship's counselor. Evidently, right. I thought, but maybe it was for this. Well, they came from time before counselors were on the ship, right?
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And I imagine after the burn, you know, when ships aren't like, you know, as strongly populated as they once were, I'm sure that a psychologist is a, you know, dispensable position.
Right.
So
couldn't hurt though.
Definitely could not.
You're talking about Saru's family. I think that Saru is probably emerging as my favorite character in Discovery, at least in the last couple of seasons, because he has, and Doug Jones is such an amazing actor. My gosh, he's like Andy Serkis. He can get into something and just bring all kinds of stuff that just believe. But he has that gentleness from being basically from what we thought was a prey species or lived as a prey, you know, a predator, having been preyed on for 2,000 years. But he has a gentleness about him and a strength. He has a quiet wisdom that I like. You see him thinking about things. Like I thought one episode was amazing is when he made the decision not to go after Giorgio, not to go to the planet to save Giorgio. And then Burnham was outraged, of course. And then the Admiral basically says, a member of your crew may die. Even if you fail, you have to make this effort. And he looked at him, he was disappointed in himself. Mm. And I thought that was amazing because he thought he'd done the right thing. The needs of the many outweighed the needs of the few. And you knew he was only doing it for logic's sake. And then when the Admiral said that to him, there was a look on his face where he just looked like I made the wrong decision. And I loved the way he talked to Michael, like when he demoted her. He has a really, really gentle, firm way of talking to people when he said, and Michael, this brings me no pleasure. I take no pleasure in doing this. Of course, everybody else is like, dude, how many times is she going to disobey orders? She needs to be demoted. I really like Saru. He literally is the definition of quiet strength. And I just, I like his character and how he keeps growing too.
Yeah, I like Saru a lot. I would love to see him maybe as an ambassador. instead of coming back to Starfleet. I would love to see him.
That's where we're headed with that.
Yeah, I think that would suit him better. I don't think he was a particularly good captain. Although I like the character a lot. I even have the little Mego Saru, my little 8-inch Saru toy. Nice. I don't think that the captaincy suits him the way it does some other people. He seems easy to manipulate when the change showed up at Kaminar. So we're on our way. Like, no, you stay there and finish your mission. He's ready to just go. But I thought he had a great rapport with the leader of Vulcan when they were there. Yes. That I could really see that developing into Saru becoming maybe the Kaminar ambassador to the Federation or whatever. Something that's involved with the plot.
I agree.
I could see that too.
Let's talk about the big thing where the season ended, and that's with Michael becoming captain of Discovery.
Finally. Yep.
What do you think, Veronica?
Finally. I feel like they started the series like, oh, we're going to see it from the first officer's point of view. And it never felt right. She felt like she was supposed to be the captain, even when she was like in jail at the very beginning. It felt like she the way she presents herself and makes decisions, it always felt she's the captain. So to me, it's finally.
Right. She's a natural, basically.
Yeah.
I think it would be it's an interesting idea to follow a someone who's not the captain and see their perspective on the adventures, but they've always put her into that role anyway, where she's the center of the story. She's leading, she's 900 years in the future, just found out that Romulans and Vulcans are related this morning, but she's leading a diplomatic mission to the Romulan Vulcan homeworld, I think that it's a structural thing the show's struggled with.
Yeah.
With how do you keep everyone else involved, but Michael still saved the day. So I think that solves that.
Right.
And I think narratively, though, they set it up in the first episode. That was her first scene with Georgiou, was her telling her that she thinks she's ready to become captain.
Yeah.
Good point.
But then she made choices that sent her down a different path. But I'm excited to see Captain Burnham. I think that's I think it's good for the show and it's good for the character.
I think so too. I don't love those somewhere between Starship Trooper and fascist uniforms they seem to be wearing now.
I do like them.
You do? I'm not loving them for some reason. Well, they kind of sort of remind me of the uniforms that the guys wore in the original Forbidden Planet movie.
Yeah. The future uniforms were very inspired, I think, by the motion picture. Because you've got like Willow with her little jumpsuit and the little belt thing on the front.
Yeah.
And then you've got the regular duty uniforms look very similar to Captain Kirk's uniform. Coloring is different. But a similar cut to to Admiral Kirk's Admiral's uniform, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah.
But Alan, what did you think of a Captain Burnham?
I think it's really, really cool. The journey that she's been on. When she first stepped foot on Discovery, she was a prisoner. Mm-hmm. Right. She was she had led a rebellion, basically. She was disgraced. She was unloved. She was unwanted. And I think watching it go from that to the journey that she's taken over three seasons and up to a captaincy is a really, really great thing to watch. And it helps that Sonequa is just a gorgeous actress. Mm-hmm. I think she is so amazing. And you can tell, especially when you see her in interviews and stuff, you can tell how much she loves that character and she loves the show. And, that's what you want to see.
Yeah.
You want to see somebody who's dedicated to what they're doing. And she has that in spades. And I think she's amazing. And I'm looking forward to seeing where the show goes with her in the captain's chair.
To your point about her growth, I thought something was very interesting. If you contrast her from the first two seasons where she was basically being a prisoner of her Vulcan upbringing, where she wasn't very emotive.
Right, right.
Remember that secret she told? That secret she told, what's his name? She'd never been in love. And you can tell everything about her. It's not just the braids, which I think is a much better, the hair, which is a much better look.
I do too.
Everything about her was more at ease this season. I mean, absolutely. It wasn't just that she was out of place. She laughs more easily. She's much more relaxed. And so there's that year of book that I'd love to see what was going on. Because every time they do something, it's like, oh, this is going to be worse than, you know, Tetris 5 or something like that. So, but her whole personality is different. She's much more at ease.
You're absolutely right about that.
Yeah.
And I do, I liked having the first episode like a solo Burnham episode. Mm-hmm. And then the second episode being focused solely on the ship. But I feel like we didn't really get a good sense of that year. Mm-mm. Of her. Absolutely. On her own. And I don't want to take half the season to do that and not have Discovery in it. But, you know, maybe she shouldn't have connected with Discovery that soon.
Yeah.
Maybe they should have been on separate, you know, for half a season so that you do get a sense of her as an individual unconnected to anything familiar and developing as a unique individual. I think that would have been so compelling.
Yeah, I think what they could have done is had both Discovery and Burnham find Starfleet headquarters independently.
Yeah.
I think that would have been great.
And then, yeah.
And like you said, you follow her for several, I mean, really get a feeling for what a different life, you know, or rather than just getting a montage at the beginning of the episode showing you her different life.
Right.
That would have been interesting.
Yeah, I thought to your point, I thought we were going to get flashbacks, or I thought we were going to get a couple episodes because it wasn't just that she was adrift for a year. The whole point that they made a big point is she said, I let everything go.
Yeah,
I guess she let go, not just that her friends may have died. It was more than that. She let go. She didn't even feel comfortable in the Federation. She didn't feel comfortable even trying to rebuild a Federation. So to your point, something went on that year. So I'm thinking, does she engage in all kinds of illegal activity because she had to? Does she kill people because she had to?
Well, we saw her steal dilithium.
Yeah, so, there you go. Right?
And she was there for 5 minutes and she did that. Yeah. So you know that she's, you know.
Yeah.
You know.
And also, when they were being chased and stuff, I will say this. I don't know if I've seen it this much in the Star Trek show. She was killing a whole bunch of people. Now, she had to.
Yeah.
But I don't think I've ever seen a Star Trek show where that many people were vaporized by a Starfleet officer because, like, when they were doing the transport, she was killing a whole bunch of people, a whole bunch of times. Again, you have to. So I agree with you. I would like to see that lost year with book. I'd like to see what happened. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That would be a fascinating
thing. I'm sure that'll be the subject of a novel or two.
Yeah, I would expect
Absolutely. The only downside of Burnham in season 3 is her hair is so different that our puppet will not match her hair anymore.
Oh no. But I love the hair. I love the look.
I do too.
I do love the look. I'm very sad that I will not be able to recreate that on a puppet.
Well, before we sign off, does anyone have any hopes for season 4? What are you looking forward to in the coming season?
I mean, it's so hard. It's so hard to say.
Yeah,
it is.
You know, which I think is exciting.
Yeah,
that you don't have a way of predicting what they're going to do next. And I'm looking forward to being surprised.
I want to see. I'm one of the people who likes political intrigue a lot.
I do too.
I want to see there is a planet, an entire planet of dilithium in a galaxy starved of dilithium. And I really want to see what's going to happen because I could see this turning into a problem where the people start thinking the Federation is not as good as it claims to be if it hoards that or if it kind of parses that out. I really want to see that. I really want to see what happens with how they get around the fact that the Federation now sits on a seat of incredible power with that dilithium and what happens with that.
I have a different answer for your question.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I would like for season 3 to have ended a little bit differently, and season 4, I think it would have been incredibly cool if we had seen throughout the season that the Federation is a little bit worse off than what we saw, and that the season ended with Vance accepting Osira's offer and the Federation and the Emerald Chain join forces. That would have been amazing. And then that would set the tone for season 4. How do you exist in that setting with Discovery caught in between the two of them?
Yeah, there's still some interesting stuff there with the Emerald Chain.
There is. There definitely is. And I can't wait to see what they do with it.
Because he straight up said he agreed with merging until she wouldn't step down.
Yeah. I love that episode. I wish that she could have continued into season 4 Osira.
Agreed.
I thought she was extremely interesting in that episode, second to last episode of the season.
Totally.
But yeah, I'd like to see more of the Emerald Chain type stuff, the relationships between these powers and,
right.
you know, just see how the story develops.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, that brings us to the end then. Alan, where can people find more of you on the internet?
Cosmicpress.com. KOZMICpress.com.
How about you, Keith?
Facebook. You can find me on Facebook and also on all the other ESO network Facebook groups. I'm members of those as well. So that's where you can find me.
Veronica, where can people find us?
Feltnerdy.com, which redirects to our Facebook page. We also have a small presence on Twitter and Instagram and working on some YouTube stuff. But always at Feltnerdy/Feltnerdy, #Feltnerdy.
Thank you for listening to Earth Station Trek. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. Give us a positive rating. You can also send us feedback at earthstationtrek@gmail.com. You can join in the fun in our Facebook group or follow us on Twitter. You can also visit us online at earthstationtrek.podbean.com. We'll see you next time. Live long and prosper.